Hi, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia, he's Slim.
Hello.
And together, we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, happy Crimes of the Future Week. Are you pumped for this episode?
Pumped. I've been so excited for it. I love Cronenberg. Major Cronenhead. Cronenbabe.
Oh. Hashtag Cronenbabe.
Cronenbabe's rise.
Also, this entire episode is brought to you by Kino Lorber's Neptune Frost, which opens in theaters in the US and Canada this weekend and expanding nationwide after that. It's described as an Afro-futurist punk sci-fi musical by musician and poet Saul Williams and artist Anisia Uziman. The synopsis, just everyone buckle up now if we haven't already picked your interest enough. Set in an otherworldly e-waste dump camp in the mountains of Rwanda, where an anti-colonialist hacking collective attempts a takeover of the authoritarian regime exploiting the region's natural resources and its people.
And no big deal, but it was the official selection of Cannes, Sundance, Toronto, and NIFF. So let's see what folks are saying about Neptune Frost. Jordan Searles of The Hollywood Reporter writes, "The future of black film, pure cinematic power." And Toussaint Egan from Polygon, "A mesmerizing Afro-punk odyssey hacking at the boundaries of gender, technology, and class."
There's some pretty good Letterboxd buzz, too, from Mariah E. Gates. "Utilizing a color palette of ultraviolet and neon blues and greens infused with music and dance, the filmmakers have crafted a world that feels both part of the greater tradition of Afrofuturism while also feeling uniquely its own." A lot of positive buzz on Letterboxd about this movie.
Yeah, don't forget to check out our list in the episode notes to add Neptune Frost to your watch list. And now it's time for Crimes of the Future. One of my most anticipated. I'm so happy I got to see it. First, let's just do the synopsis of Crimes of the Future. It is on 57,000 watch lists. Okay, so tagline, "Enter the heart of darkness." As the human species adapts to a synthetic environment, the body undergoes new transformations and mutations. With his partner Caprice, celebrity performance artist Saul Tenzer publicly showcases the metamorphosis of his organs in avant-garde performances. Tim Lin, that's Kristen Stewart, an investigator from the National Organ Registry, obsessively tracks their movements, which is when a mysterious group is revealed. Their mission? To use Saul's notoriety to shed light on the next phase of human evolution.
Oh, so you're a self-described Cronen babe,
yes,
as you mentioned at the top of the show.
Yes, I am.
I enjoy Cronenberg's films. They're always very weird, very strange. And you have seen Crimes of the Future? Is this true?
It's true. I did get to see Crimes of the Future. So grateful for it. I did enjoy it. It's a hard recommend because it's very dark and strange, as you said. And it's also very dense and literary. It almost feels like a novel. There are so many ideas crammed into it, and they're all very, very interesting. You know, a little bit back when Doctor Strange 2 came out, and there are those tweets that were like, in order to understand Doctor Strange 2, like, you have to see this Avengers movie and WandaVision and this episode of What If and da-da-da. Okay, so like the Cronenberg version of that is, to prepare for Crimes of the Future, you should watch Existence. You should read his novel Consumed, which is very good and very underrated. And you should really watch Dead Ringers, because a lot of themes from these three works, particularly Dead Ringers, are explored. I just rewatched Dead Ringers, and Jeremy Irons' character has this whole notion of like inner beauty, about how we should judge beauty based on our insides and our organs and how unique our organs are, which is exactly what happens in this film.
I'm very scared of this movie, if I can be honest
with you. It's not as gory as you would think. Like, it's really not. It's really not too graphic, at least not as much as his other films have been.
David Sims from Blank Check has a review on Letterboxd. "Real good, real melancholy. Always weak for an elegiac. Am I losing my edge? Movie from an aging master. Vigo, very tender." And Scorgy, "A movie about a shocking futuristic world where people like performance art."
That is true. I kept thinking that while watching it, because like this, he's playing a performance artist and everybody's like recognizing him. They're like, oh, I love your work. I love you so much. And that's funny.
All right, let's move on to our next film out this week, Watcher, from director Chloe Okuno. And this is theaters and video on demand, 12,000 watch lists. As a serial killer stalks the city, Julia, a young actress who just moved to town with her husband, notices a mysterious stranger watching her from across the street. Ooh. Micah Monroe. Am I in love with Micah Monroe? I mean, I just watched It Follows for the first time in years this week in preparation for a Letterboxd Show episode. And then this, I think she's fantastic. She needs to be in more movies. Scream Queen.
Yes, absolutely fantastic. Scream Queen, as Lucy's review says, which we'll get to in a moment. This film reminded me of the inverse of Michael Mohan's The Voyeurs, which came out last year, if anybody saw that one. And it also really, really reminded me of Rosemary's Baby, which is very purposeful because it has the same title card, pink cursive font as Rosemary's Baby, which is definitely an homage because then the film really, it's very paranoid, just right. Like that film.
I love the title font too. This reminded me of, I think it's compared a lot to Rear Window. I like that it's set in Romania. So she's trying to learn the language. So, and her husband is there for work. He doesn't believe her about anything she's seeing from across the street. And I also love that there were like no subtitles when anyone was speaking around her to almost like make you feel kind of nervous and left out like her. So that was pretty
yes, cool. Yes, exactly. That was something I noticed too. There were no subtitles, which really added to like the alienation and isolation that her character was feeling. She was so alone.
Josh Rubin, director of Werewolves Within, gave it 4 stars. So good and effective and unsettling. And he gave the emoji, is it the pinched fingers emoji at the end of the review?
That's the Italian emoji to me. It's like the
pinched, I looked it up.
Mamma
it's
pinched.
It's our Italian audience is writing a negative iTunes review, but it's the pinched fingers emoji. I didn't know that that actually was what it was called until I put it into Google. So
yeah.
Positive buzz for Watcher. I liked it. I liked it a lot. So that's my take right there.
And now we're going to switch into a very different tone, kind of the opposite. It's very fun. Rom-com. Woohoo. Fire Island. Mm-hmm. Directed by Andrew Ahn. This is going to be on Hulu, and it is on 4,000 watch lists.
It takes a match to light a fire, Mia. Two gay best friends take a trip to the Pines, a hamlet on New York's Fire Island that's a hot spot for queer culture. Over the course of their vacation, they party with friends and develop flirtations with two other significantly wealthier vacationers. This is on Hulu.
Yes, on Hulu. It's also Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. It is, and it's basically what if Pride and Prejudice was really gay and Asian and on Fire Island. So that's awesome. That's enough of a sell, I think. And also Bowen Yang stars of SNL, and he's playing basically Rosamund Pike's character from the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, which is fun. Mm. It's fun to get that. Come on.
I had an amazing time watching this. This was cracking me up. The whole movie, it was so well written, and it's written and starring Joel Kim Booster, which I had no idea until the credits started rolling. Bowen Yang even has a Letterboxd review right now. Go see this when it comes out.
Yeah, he's right. He's right. Go see it when it comes out. It's easy to do. It's on Hulu.
I was watching a video. Joel wrote the movie, but he had said that he literally took Pride and Prejudice on a trip to Fire Island with Bowen one year. And that's what kicked off the whole idea to write this movie, which was cracking me up.
That rules. That just rules. I feel like, I mean, and this has kind of been, we've been kind of talking about this on the internet. I don't know if you've seen this discourse, but we want a resurgence of these classic novels transposed for modern times. Mm. These are classic stories that are just like, they never go out of style. And it's really, really cool to see them in a modern setting, especially you know, like in the gay Asian community, because we don't get a ton of representation there. And it was yeah. just very validating and cool to see.
I was sitting in my basement watching this, seeing all these attractive, sexy men shirtless when I'm sitting on the couch stuffing my face with sour cream and onion Pringles. I felt sick. All right, so we have a ton of movies coming out this week, so we're going to try our first ever lightning round because there are a few others we want to spotlight. We'll do it really quick so you can get these on your watch list as well. Benediction. directed by Terrence Davies, legend, hitting theaters, 8,000 watch list, the story of a soldier and poet who was decorated for bravery on the Western Front and is remembered for his angry and compassionate poems, starring Jack Loudon, Peter Capaldi, and as I mentioned, the legendary Terrence Davies. Ella wrote a review, will only get richer on a rewatch, gorgeous in every sense, focused yet panoramic look at a life defined by love and loss in ways that can be quite destabilizing. Jack Loudon is, we knew this already, but never more than here, incredible, quote. Next up, Phantom of the Open, directed by Craig Roberts. This is getting a lot of buzz on Letterboxd, specifically from Gemma, wrote, more films about ordinary people who are a bit shit at fancy things, but give them a crack anyway. So this is about Maurice, a dreamer and unrelenting optimist, managed to gain entry to the British Open Golf Championship in 1976. And subsequently shot the worst round in open history. It's co-written by the writer of Paddington. You're a Paddington fan, aren't you, Mia?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm a huge Paddington fan. It is directed by Craig Roberts, who you may recognize from the film Submarine. If anybody watched Submarine a couple years ago, he's like the lead teenage protagonist. That's one of my favorite movies. And he's now directing his own movie. And I think that's neat.
Big shot. So this was co-written by the writer of Paddington, Scott Farnaby, aka Barry the Security Guard, as well as Scott Murray. So if you dig Paddington, it might be time to check out Phantom of the Open.
Once again, we are switching up tones, and now we're gonna kind of go back into the vein of Neptune Frost with After Blue, Dirty Paradise, directed by Bertrand Mandico. It is in theaters, and it is on 5,500 watch lists. In a distant future, on a savage planet, the lonely teenager Roxy frees a criminal buried in the sand. Once freed, the woman starts spreading fear and death once again. Roxy and her mother Zora are deemed responsible, exiled from their community, and sentenced to track down the killer. Thus, they begin roaming the fantastical and spectral territories of their dirty paradise. So what this synopsis does not tell you is that the killer in question is literally named Kate Bush, and the film is heavily, heavily inspired by her and her imagery. She's very trendy right now because of the 80s nostalgia show, Stranger Things. Apparently Running Up That Hill is featured in that show very, very prominently.
It is.
So now a new generation are discovering her work, which is awesome. I love Kate Bush so, so, so much. Check out the cover photo as well.
Zach Green writes, if the never-ending story was horny as hell and every second word was Kate Bush.
See, that sold me just like that review alone. We have another one from Ryan. After Blue is, in short, a misty masterpiece, meticulous in detail. Sensual, stunning, stylish, and strange. A goopy, glimmering fantasia full of glitter and fashion.
That's a great review.
Excellent alliteration, Ryan.
Oh my God. Bonus alliteration points. What the French?
Wow, yeah. So check out this dreamy avant-garde sci-fi fantasy western.
Let's look back at last week. Mia, Top Gun is saving cinema as we know it. Are you ready to just expand on your thoughts in seeing Top Gun this past week?
Top Gun is incredible. I was not expecting to love it as much as I did. These are not generally my type of films. However, this one just like completely blew me away. Saw it in IMAX. The seats were shaking like I'm in an air show. It's very emotionally heavy hitting as well. Like I was crying in the theater over these guys and their brotherhood. Yeah, it's beautiful on every front. And it's going to save cinema. It's going to save it.
It has already. I just saw a news alert come through my phone. It just said Top Gun has officially saved cinema.
See, they're reporting on it. Yeah, it's back. And he's going to save it again next year with Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
Have you watched the trailer for Dead Reckoning yet?
I haven't watched it because I know I'm going to see it. It's like I'm going to be seeing this movie, so I don't need to see the trailer. At the same time, the Mission Impossible Fallout trailer went so hard that maybe
one of the best trailers ever made.
Mission Impossible Fallout trailer made me watch all previous Mission Impossibles. I had never seen a single one, saw that trailer, went and watched all of them in preparation. So
what's your favorite one?
Fallout. It is Fallout.
Fallout is so good, and I won't get into spoilers, but I mean that conversation that takes place between the two of them in that like hospital ish room. Ugh. Are you kidding me? Love is real, Mia. Love is real.
Mission Impossible is about love.
So one review I'll spotlight for Top Gun. Saw this opening night. It's from Andy Stone. Saw this opening night at a packed theater in San Diego. It was absolutely electric. The crowd was wild and the movie was everything you could ever hope for. 2 hours of cheering, clapping, getting choked up, or staring in absolute awe. The best time I can remember having at the movies in a long time.
Yeah, San Diego. Unreal. I just wanted to bring up Iceman really quick. But I just want to say that the way that they portrayed Val Kilmer's character, Iceman, really blew me away. It was so respectful, mm-hmm. handled with such empathy and grace. And I just think it's really sweet that they like wrote his illness into the script and then yeah. also handled it with compassion. It was a really sweet send-off.
What about Bob's Burgers? You seen Bob's Burgers yet in theaters? You're a Bob's fan.
I am. I watched the first like couple seasons when they were coming out. I really loved it. Made me laugh. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm going to get my buns in theaters and see Bob's Burgers because it's just sweet. Mm-hmm.
Burger Buns is probably another good nickname. Mitch's review. My Burger Buns by the Itty Bitty Ditty Committee is the song of the summer. I did see it in theaters. We took a little family trip on Sunday to go see it. And it was good. It was fun. And I sound like it's a negative review just because of the tone of my explanation. I don't know. I liked it. The songs are great. The animation was amazing when people were dancing. It was the best dancing animation ever in Bob's, but it wasn't like excellent. I feel like I could probably watch this on Hulu also on the weekend when it hits. So Bob's Burgers fan will get a kick out of it for sure.
And aren't you a musical phobe? Is that true?
That's not true. That's an ugly rumor. I remember I was trying to think back of who, I think it was you and I who were talking about Bob's off air. And I think I said my least favorite episodes were like the musical episodes. And you were like, isn't that every episode?
Yeah.
The songs were very good. I think the songs were actually the best part of the movie, to be honest.
Look at that. Okay, we already spotlighted Top Gun Maverick, so now I want to spotlight another film that's coming out on June 8th on HBO called The Janes. It'll be in some theaters as well, but it is an important new documentary about the Jane Collective of the pre-Roe early 1970s. Mm. This was an underground network of women who helped those in need secure safe, affordable, and unfortunately illegal abortions. It is extraordinarily and despicably timely. Another narrative film is coming out somewhat soon, I believe, called Call Jane. It is a narrative version of this documentary, basically, and it stars Elizabeth Banks and Chris Messina. That's also a great one. Give it a watch when that one comes out. But yeah, for now, The Janes documentary, HBO, June 8th.
Maybe last review we'll spotlight from the previous week before we get into our watch lists. Ryan McQuaid saw Men. The clear definition of when someone does something to be an ally and it blows up in their face, thus making the problem 10 times worse. So that's Ryan's thoughts on Men. Very divisive film on Letterboxd.
Now it's time to check in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 list, see what is at the top of the list for films released this year. Ruben Östlund's Palm d'Or winner Triangle of Sadness entering at number 17, which Neon picked up, and Park Chan-wook's Best Director winner Decision to Leave is entering at number 32, which was picked up by Mubi. Unfortunately, no U.S. release dates just yet. I am so excited for this one. I love Park Chan-wook, one of my favorite working directors.
Decision to Leave is like all over my Twitter feed. When that movie was announced, all the buzz about that movie, holy smokes.
Yeah, I'm buzzing around.
The highest other new entry is the Irish film The Quiet Girl at number 6. And Jack actually saw this, left a review. Beautiful, but very understated. Alicia Haddock had a great interview with a director out of the Berlin Film Festival, so we'll have a link to that in the episode notes. But it's time to go to our watch lists. This is what everyone's been waiting for. Mia's thoughts on Winter's Tale. Eventually, we're almost there. We're so close to Winter's Tale official thoughts. But last time we were together, we shuffled our watch list, and I got Nosferatu from Werner Herzog. My wife was pissed watching this movie with me. She did not like it. She gave up an hour in before retiring to bed. Isabella from Possession is actually in this.
Oh, love her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. This is a very, we said understated in Jack's review of that film, but this one just felt like a very slow burn, but had amazing photography. Every time Dracula, which I cracked up because they do pronounce it that way in this movie. It was beautiful. Loved seeing him on screen. It looked great. I didn't love it. I gave it 3 stars, I think, on this viewing. Renfield is in it. The psychotic Renfield, who everyone might know from every Dracula movie ever, but his laugh made me want to claw my own eyes out in this movie. But it was gorgeous, so I'm glad I watched it.
The poster is one of the most beautiful posters ever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ever.
Winter's Tale. I'm ready to hear about this movie.
Winter's Tale. So I think that my getting Winter's Tale is proof that I'm being honest when I shuffle my watch list. If you were wondering, because I had a really good run the last couple ones. They were very good. And now we're on to Winter's Tale, which I thought was an adaptation of the Shakespeare play, The Winter's Tale. I really believed this. And it turns out it is an adaptation of a 700-page novel by a conservative commentator. Very, very different.
Womp womp.
This movie is ridiculous. Russell Crowe is Irish demon Javert of Les Mis, essentially. He's doing a terrible Irish accent in front of Colin Farrell, which is very sad and upsetting. And then Colin Farrell himself, which is why I watched the movie, is kind of playing Irish angel Jean Valjean, and the two are mad at each other. And then Will Smith plays the devil.
Oh my God.
Will Smith plays the devil. He's wearing a t-shirt. Yeah, it's a very strange cast. Will Smith is dressed in a t-shirt and a blazer, and he's playing the devil. One of the plot points of this film is that Colin has such beautiful, tender sex with a woman who has consumption that she dies in bed right there. And
what a way to go.
Yeah, this movie is so unserious, too. Like, that moment does not hit. It's just like we were laughing, laughing, laughing. Like, yeah, this is an incomprehensible had a lot of fun.
What's your rating? Did you give a rating for this
one? It is so hard to rate this. I couldn't even rate it. I was like, this is nonsense. But I guess I would give it a solid 2.
Solid 2. Okay.
Solid 2. Maybe even bad. A heart. I have That's fun. Colin Farrell's hair is very funny. Please look up a picture of what his hair looks like in this film. It's unbelievable. He looks like the villain in The Lorax.
Was not expecting that movie to be in comparison with Winter's Tale.
I wasn't even expecting it to come out of my mouth just now, and then it did.
So some friends are shuffling their watch list alongside of us, and if you want to do that, you can go to your watch list, and you can sort by shuffle, and what we do is the first movie that shows up in the list, we'll watch that. So Liam trying to find a way into my own heart with the Vanilla Sky review, one of my favorite movies of all time. In my top 4, mind you. They write, you know what? This is a cinematic masterpiece. I don't know why, but this is just an absolutely amazing movie to watch. There's something so great in seeing Tom Cruise go insane for 2 hours. Cameron Crowe knows how to direct great movies.
That's been in my watch list for years and years and years and years. One of my former coworkers, it's like her favorite movie ever also. So I should check it out, huh?
Don't sound too excited. You don't have to check. You don't have to watch anything you don't want to, Mia.
No. I should watch it. It's in your top 4 and I respect you. So
thank you. Thank you. It's mutual.
Aw, thank you.
Mrs. Darcy's speed review. This is either a 1-star movie masquerading as a 5-star movie or a 5-star movie masquerading as a 1-star movie. And there's literally no objective way to determine which. That's a very good review. Very true about Speed.
Speed, yeah, that one's fun.
Remember when the shopping cart gets run over by the bus, and Keanu's like, "It was cans." It was cans.
Speed is fun.
Speed is fun. Let's go to our watch list and shuffle again.
Okay.
Let's head to our watch list. I will filter service by stream because pro members can do that. So I'm going to stream only.
I also want to say I forgot to do that last time and I did pay to watch Winter's Tale. I paid $4 to watch it.
Get your credit card to refund that.
Yeah.
Say that it wasn't worth it. Sort by shuffle is the next thing to do. And my movie is The One I Love 2014 Charlie McDowell. On the brink of separation, Ethan and Sophie escape to a beautiful vacation house for a weekend getaway in an attempt to save their marriage. What begins as a romantic and fun retreat soon becomes surreal.
I like that movie a lot.
Really?
I want to say.
Elizabeth
Moss.
Yeah,
I've seen it. Everybody gets one Scientologist, and that's, for me, it's her.
It's a 4-star from you on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Wow,
I watched it back in college one night, like getting stoned in my dorm, and I had a great time.
This is streaming on Tubi. If anyone wants to watch along with me, tag your review weekend watch list. Maybe we'll spotlight it next week. Let's see what you get this time.
I got The Draftsman's Contract, 1982, directed by Peter Greenaway, who is one of my favorite auteurs. He's disgusting. I love his disgusting little flicks. I do. A young artist is commissioned by the wife of a wealthy landowner to make a series of drawings of the estate while her husband is away. Sounds like Portrait of Lady on Fire a little bit.
The wig work is insane.
Yeah, check out that cover photo. I love Peter Greenaway, as I just said, so I'm very excited for this. He did Cook, Thief, Wife, Lover. Disgusting movie. Grossest movie I've ever seen, and I've seen Human Centipede two or three times.
Now I'm intrigued at that movie. I'm looking this up.
Oh, check that one out. That one's a classic.
His wife and her lover. Lust, murder, dessert, bon appetit.
Peter Greenaway. Woo.
Thank you so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. Also, it's very possible that Mitchell will be on a well-deserved break next week. So if you need your Mitchell fix, check out their podcast, Acting Out. We'll have a link in the episode notes.
Thank you to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. And thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.